I've actually looked online for Murray's sound effect library, but it's I can't seem to find it anywhere. So if anyone's got access to Murray's sound effect library, contact us, please.
Who's Murray? In the
Murray,
sound booth.
Murray Tregonga. Tregoning?
Tregoning, yeah.
Oh, this is a Hey Hey Saturday reference.
Exactly. Yes. He had so many great sound effects. Yeah, the boing. And oh, don't forget, this is Lucky Phil.
This is Lucky Phil.
And then that was Lucky Phil.
Anyway.
Yeah, all right. Blah, 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 blah. Welcome to Frank and Open Discussion for the first time in 5, maybe 6 months. Where have we been and have you missed us?
Oh, who?
Frank and Open Discussion. All the kids are listening to it.
Well,
what's our excuse, lads? What's our excuse?
Well, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? It's the golden age of podcasts at the moment because everyone who's famous has got one.
That's right. And as usual, we subverted expectations. We bucked the trend.
Not all that famous, I suppose. Maybe that's why. But yes, I guess we've all been busy, haven't we?
What have you been up to, Dean Povey?
What have I been up to? I've been getting drum lessons. I took my inspiration from Neil Peart, of course, who famously went back and relearned the drums. So I thought I would just do that exact same thing, except just learning the drums for the first time instead. And it's been good.
And that's really positive because this will allow you later to relearn the drums.
Exactly. It's a long-term plan that I'm having. What about you, Ben? How's the new album going?
So the new album is getting more and more complicated and difficult. I think I said at some point it's like trying to approach the speed of light.
Mm. Have you cravened it up?
The faster you go, the harder it is, the slower you go. You know, the heavier you get.
The cravening is getting more intense.
The harder it is to reach the speed you're trying to get to.
I see.
That's a good thing. That's a good problem. That's a good challenge. I want the big challenges.
So when can we look forward to a release of that?
Well, actually, I am, and here's a plug. I am, you know, leaking bits of it on my Patreon channel.
I have been listening.
I've thought in the past that Patreon, that sort of thing, is the future of the music industry. But given how many musicians are introverts, I'm not sure it's going to work out for everybody.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
We are Frankenfido. So what's happening in the world of Frankenfido?
What's our Eurovision song called? Last words.
Was it Lost Words or Last Words? I can never remember where.
It's Lost.
Depends who's singing.
Bloody Ken.
When you re-recorded it, you re-recorded it with Lost Words, right? There's a video somewhere of you like getting him to sing it on your phone and then editing it in.
Yes, there is.
Maybe there was.
Didn't you put it on your Patreon? You're like, look, how cool am I? Like, who needs these expensive microphones? I can just go record it on my phone.
Right. Yes, we did it. We did it in the office, didn't we?
Yeah, and then I can make it sound like it's good.
At that place where we work. Well, at that place where they think we work.
Yes.
See, this is your genius.
I forgot about that.
Right. Rather than get a good, like, recording your performance, you just go, turn in your shit, and I'll polish that turd until it shines.
And as Jeff would say, Frank and Fido are a living example of that.
Yeah, we are.
A shining example.
Shining.
I wouldn't say that about that song.
Last words.
Last words, almost ready to go out the door, clip almost done. Nice. We'll be handing that over to Peter the Phantom Publisher presently. I don't know if the world is asking for another Frank and Fido song. I hope that they are, but it's something we need to educate.
Flush it out of our system.
Yeah, they need to know that they want it, and we're here to tell them.
Looking forward to it.
There's last words. We don't have a name for the next song, we're just waiting for the male model Ken to put down the vocals.
I got some more drums that I want to do on that.
Yes, so I need when I get your drum tracks.
Yeah,
I'm gonna chuck them off. In, and I can retime them and replace them.
Nice, love it.
What was the title? We have a title for that song yet? It came out of Ken's lyric. Remember, Ken had a strange lyric like "friend space" or something like that.
Friend zoned.
Friend zone. Oh yeah.
I thought it was something like.
I like that lyric that he put in, but I think he took it out.
Sun in the sky, things are crazy in strange ways, or so many ways, something like that.
Oh, okay. So friend zone's long gone.
In such little ways.
See, I want to bring back the friend zone. I thought that was a great lyric that he put in there. But well done, Ken.
On you, Ken, wherever you are.
In some little way, everything's wrong in some little way. If you flowed right into me, if the beats all kept in time, if the grapes became the wine, then you'll flow right into me. That sounds like a chorus, so yeah. In some little way. Everything's wrong in some little way. It sounds very Radiohead.
There's not enough, like, dystopian robots and people committing suicide.
Anyway, so we got our Eurovision ballad coming out at some point. I haven't seen video.
It kind of Alfred Hitchcock, you know, when he made movies, the actual process of making the movie was incredibly boring to him because he'd already made it in his head.
Right.
Just saying.
It was just then, you know, he's to screw it up.
Oh, no, even worse with Brian Wilson in bed. Why should I even bother getting out of bed and finishing this song? Because I know now what it sounds like. I know how good it can sound. Anything beyond this point now will just be a disappointment.
I think Woody Allen said a similar thing. Bullets Over Broadway was his favourite movie he ever did because every movie starts off as perfection and, like, he just constantly screws it up until it's like, you know, basically it never comes as good, as close in his head as he thought. And that was the movie that he said he felt. He said, even though it might not be my best movie, that was the movie that was nearer to my vision as I could get.
And look, that's a really interesting concept that I think all three of us can appreciate, which is how close can you get, for instance, a piece of music to what was in your head originally? How do you stick to that vision and not get distracted by something which may sound better and be more interesting, but then, you know, goes against your original vision? When do you let go of your vision?
You know, is that a virtue? I actually like the idea that, but particularly, and this particularly works in this band, right? Because you come with an idea, and if people like that, or that, you know, they pick the bits that they don't like, they add something of their own, and you hear that, and you feed back, and, you know, you want to do something slightly different. And even in the process of you trying to get something out that's in your head, I like maybe find something that's near to that, that's maybe better than my original idea. I suppose what comes out of your head isn't necessarily pure. It's like possibly infected by other things that you've listened to or heard. You know, maybe there's an easier path there. But when you're actually trying to like express that on an instrument, there's this physicality of you that gets in the way that nobody else has. And I think in that process for me, often there's creativity that happens. And certainly when you hear other people's input, you're like, oh, yeah, I hear that, now I want to do this.
Or you could just say that what you wound up with is exactly what you were going for, even though it's not. You could just, you know,
You could claim that, yeah.
No, look, I mean, I hit this a lot, and I suspect you guys do. I certainly suspect Jeff does, where you're hearing something in your head, but actually in reality, in this universe, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I get that with counter melodies. You know, I got this bass line and this melody, and in my head they sound great, but when you actually start to put it together, it's like, no, they don't go together at all.
Yeah, the scales do not work the way I think they should. Hey, Jeff, we got to get a word in. Your segment, double albums. Introduce it, please.
Well, something which caught my eye recently was which double albums should have been single albums.
I thought that was a good discussion. The answer is all of them.
No. That's not true. There are some great double albums.
There are some crap
double albums as well.
We're not interested in the crap double albums, right?
Well, that's a point of contention, and drum always makes for a good listen.
Yeah, true. Can we agree on what a good double album is and what a bad double album is?
And what a good double album, a good single album, sorry, a double album that should have been, would have been a good single album is another one.
Are there double albums that are better as double albums versus the incredible single albums they could have been?
Well, there are double albums that should have been three sides, I think. Like Pink Floyd, The Wall is probably the best example.
Yeah, look, let's
kind of drags on and sides.
That's an obvious thing.
But you wouldn't. Yeah. I tried it once. I couldn't bring it down to a single album.
Oh, well, you're just not ruthless enough.
I'm tough and ruthless. The other days I'm rough and toothless.
The Wall is something to me that would have been an absolutely killer, brilliant single album. Much better than Dark Side of the Moon, which is potentially overrated. And as usual, the problem is who would agree on what those songs are?
What would you chop?
Let's leave that as an exercise to the listener. And if anyone is interested in reaching out to wherever you hear this podcast and
send us your single album version.
Send us your single album version of The Wall, 45 minutes, got to fit on one side of a 90-minute cassette tape.
Lines are open now.
It does have the virtue of, as a double album, of having a very suffocating atmosphere that is nice to inhabit now and then when you're feeling pretty shitty.
So a famous double album that most people agree has a shitty second album is the White Album.
That's a great EP.
One could agree, right? No one could agree what those songs should be for the single album.
Kind of like having those weird things on them though, don't you reckon? Like, you don't have to listen to it all the time, I suppose. That's the thing. Like, it doesn't have to be an experience that you just always got to listen to the all of the album.
I don't think they could have made a single album at that particular time, right? No one actually would agree what the best songs are. And had the Beatles agreed on that, would they have worked on those songs to make them better? Look, as Mac has said, it's the Beatles' White Album. It's the bloody White Album. It's sold. Stop whinging about it.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, here's a good example. Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Oh, yes.
Really, Use Your Illusion 2 was pretty good. Use Your Illusion number 1 only had a couple of good songs on it. They could probably just have chucked the first one away, I think.
It does have some good songs on it. That's the problem. I'm trying to remember. I used to listen to that quite a lot. So I think November Rhett was on the first one.
Yeah, the first one wasn't as good as the second one.
Yeah,
my argument is you could have
it had
got all the good ones from the first one and the good ones from the second one and made one good double up. I mean, it was one long CD, right? 70-something minutes. That's
I'm just looking it up. So Live and Let Die was on the first one, and November Rain and Live and Let Die,
Don't Cry.
Those are the three good ones.
And November Rain. They're the only good songs.
What? You wouldn't go Live and Let Die?
I didn't really like it that much. I prefer the original.
Oh, so did I. But, I mean, that song is great, but it's still interesting to hear than cover it. I think you could have kept it.
Yeah. Well, see, number two had Knocking on Heaven's Door, which was a useless cover.
Absolutely.
Why would you do that?
Well, it was, a different take on a classic song. I thought it was good.
It had an alternative version of Don't Cry. Yeah.
It had Civil War, which is the best song on that whole album, in my opinion. What was the one that was in Terminator?
Estranged was a good song as well.
You could be mine.
You take the best of number one, the best of number two. You'd have a fantastic record. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Frankie Goes to Hollywood. First side of the first album, fantastic. The second album, I only remember one song, really. That was The Power of Love. But the first one had Welcome to the Pleasure Dome, Relax, Two Tribes, War. Fantastic.
So I remember us having a discussion about War of the Worlds one time. We were like, second album, what a load of rubbish. And then we went through all the songs. We're like, oh, actually, that's quite a good one. That's a good one. War of the Worlds is one that you could kind of forgive because it's a narrative, the narrative of that album.
Yeah, but it really slows down on the second record.
There's a lot of musical repetition.
But I mean, on the first record too.
The first one, but I love the repetition of the disco stuff. I've got to say that. I love that stuff.
I mean,
I could listen to the whole second album of that.
If you guys have ever gone to musicals, and I feel like that was an attempt at a kind of that approach.
Right.
Right, it's about a lot of returned theme that goes on, reprises and whatnot.
Motifs, I think, are the word.
Leitmotifs.
Leitmotif.
Leitmotif. Anyway, War of the Worlds, I don't know, for me, you know, most of the good stuff's on the first album anyway.
Yeah, that's true, for sure.
So that's, I'm happy.
Autumn Leaves on the first one.
Yeah,
it's on the first one.
Which, if you read, was not even originally part of the... There was an older song that Jeff Wayne had. I think it was a previous single or something that he rewrote for the album. I guess they had to put a kind of a love theme in there or something.
Who's the guy who sang that? Moody Blues guy?
Moody, yeah.
What's his
Justin.
Name?
Justin Hayward. Bieber. Hayward, yeah. Great song, great voice. What more could you ask for? So did we talk about Topographic?
Well, I did mention it, but you could probably break it down to one song.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, famously with Topographic, it was mapped out in minutes before it was mapped out in music. Yeah, well, they kind of said, right, this is what we've got and let's fill in the gaps. And I certainly know that Rick certainly thought it should have been shorter.
It's certainly an album that was released.
I don't know, and there are bits of it that I love and there are bits of it that I don't like as much as the bits that I love.
What about Physical Graffiti? Led Zeppelin.
Well, there's an album that should have been one song, right?
Cashmere.
Yeah.
In My Time of Dying, there's two good songs.
Oh, yes, that's true.
In the Light, there could be a single album. It could have been a good single album. It's got a lot. Led Zeppelin did a lot of 50s kind of rockabilly kind of stuff. So in that sense, I think half of Physical Graffiti is not my cup of tea. That's why I suggest it could have been a great single album.
Is there a double album that we can agree is better as a double album? What is the greatest double album of all time that needs to be a double album? It can't be a live album. It's got to be like a studio album.
Metal Machine Music? What about Yellow Brick Road? Electric Ladyland? Well, it's hard because you listen now in the CD age, albums can be 70 or 80 minutes. You don't think anything of it.
Yeah, and they shouldn't
it's great,
be.
But if it was on vinyl, it would be a double album.
Well, what's a 70 or 80 minute, 76 minute album that's on CD that would qualify as a double vinyl?
We Can't Dance. That's about 71 minutes, I think.
What about Bitches Brew by Miles Davis?
Oh, that's fantastic.
One I didn't think of. Yeah, it's a fantastic album. That's an album where you listen to it and go, if you're not really into jazz and you listen to that, you'd be like, what the fuck is this garbage? And if you're a bit into jazz, you listen to it and you go, what the fuck is this garbage? But it's Miles Davis, so I better give it another listen. Yeah. And you realize it's just incredible. Like, it's hard to listen to. You've got to, like, really get your head into it and all that discordant stuff that's going on.
I'm going to actually just do a quick internet search for the double album in case there's anything we've forgotten about. Yeah, best double albums of all time.
Exile on Main Street. There you go.
Yeah.
Quadrophenia, The River.
Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. That's
London Calling.
That was an interesting one because...
Blonde on Blonde.
Fragile by Nine Inch Nails is on there. And I think what's interesting about that and maybe how you should approach a double album is it's a double album, but it has like one that's kind of slower and more ballady and one that's kind of high energy. So rather than sort of take it and just like splatter songs across that, it's like a concept album. Within that concept is some sub-concepts that form their own unit together.
Songs in the Key of Life.
Yeah, I saw that one, but then I was like,
it's got some great, it'd be an awesome single album. The great songs are great. Shit. Jesus, this was a good topic, Jeff. We can't violently disagree with each other.
Well, see, I'm trying to keep the conversation away from classic rock.
I know, but certainly the idea of a double album is as classic rock as you're going to get. Yeah, Tusk is someone. You just mentioned Tusk, didn't you?
What about Sonic Youth, Daydream Nation? That was pretty good.
Well, hang on. What about Lamb?
The Lamb? Yeah. That's probably another
How did we not talk about Lamb?
It was too obvious.
Is it? I thought Topographic was too obvious.
Yeah, well, the Lamb, I struggle because I know that Peter Gabriel ran out of time on the second album or the fourth side. He had to get Mark Rutherford and Tony Banks put in some lyrical ideas and it kind of suffers. It would have been a good three-sided album rather than a four-sided album, I think.
What do you do on that fourth side when you've only got three sides? What is it, like a picture disc?
Yeah, or... I've seen like laser etching is what they do.
Mm. Or would you put like an interview or you put some outtakes or something? Because I actually seriously am wondering this because bringing it back to me, I'm feeling that the album I'm working on at the moment is coming three sides and I don't want it to be four sides. And
well, what's that in the CD world? That's 60 minutes, right?
True. Oh, yeah. In a CD world, it's fine. It'd fit, no worries. But if I ever find a rich benefactor who wants to make vinyl, what do you do? What do you
do? You just do 15 minutes a side.
No, but I can't if there's like three songs on the album.
Right. Well, then you do laser etched fourth side.
Okay. I like it.
Some artwork.
Or I'll just throw my single edits on the fourth side.
Or some Frankenfido tunes.
Sure.
Hey, what about I'm a Gummer?
You know what? The Narrow Way, David's section, Narrow Way Part 3, is as Pink Floyd as Pink Floyd ever got before that point for me. Certainly, I think the live side's pretty good, right? Studio side, David and Roger stuff is pretty good.
It's certainly a studio side.
Again, imagine what someone could have done if they'd taken those bits and if they'd worked together.
Oh, Dean. Mm. Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me.
Oh, yes. That may well be the answer to the question.
I could listen to it again all the way through.
Yeah, like...
That's high praise.
I like
what
it.
What about a triple album that could be a double album?
Well, like All Things
All
Must
Things
Pass.
Must Pass.
Sandinista, that was probably come down to a single album. Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. Wings Over America, oh, that's a live album. Welcome Back, My Friends and Yes Songs.
Hang on. Was English Settlement a double album?
I think originally it was.
Well, that could be my answer.
Oranges and Lemons was certainly a double album.
Really?
You're pretty sure it was.
I think we've exhausted it.
Yeah.
What was our other segment, Dean?
News.
Well, okay, news, COVID and live. I don't know. Does anyone care?
Impact that has had on live music, which is to say there isn't much of note.
Well, there is. How many bands have you seen selling tickets to shows that clearly aren't going to happen or shouldn't happen?
Yeah, I was tempted to the Fortitude, what is that called? The Fortitude.
Oh, music, yes.
Music Hall.
They picked a great time to open, didn't they?
So there was Ocean Alley and the Psychedelic Porn Crumpets. Yeah, they were playing a gig in early 2021 and I was like, really tempted to buy a ticket. I did see like this sort of social distancing concert thing, which was you had these like little pods.
Oh, yeah.
Like to sit down, it was outside. You could sort
the
of
one that
down
looked like a Pink Floyd album cover.
Oh, is that with those little inflatable spheres that people go in?
Oh, yeah. Look like the hospital beds or something.
Semispheres. Hemispheres. That's a Rush album.
Good name for an album, yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, look, certainly it's impacted Frankenfido, right? Due to social distancing, we cannot get together in the same room at the moment. It is not wise to do that.
Particularly now you're in a small room, is that right?
That's another thing. So yes, we've gone full circle. We've gone full circle from the question at the beginning of the show. I had a room there large enough for a band to be in. It's the kind of rehearsal room, a playroom, and it wasn't getting used. So the studio itself is moved back into the room it originally was when I moved into this house. So that was the original studio room where I finished off the Potions album.
So what does that mean for jamming? No more jamming?
No. So earlier this week on the Book of Faces, I had a photo of a closet keyboard. So there's a room upstairs. That, yeah. At a moment's notice, it turns into a jam room. All the gears in the cupboard, the keys and the mixer, all that kind of stuff, and you can connect in, and you know, it's a nice kind of loungy, carpeted kind of room.
One thing we need to talk about to close out this podcast is a promise that we made to our listeners last podcast, which was we're going to go away and make something. We're going to go and record something.
That's true. And we did 4 months ago, 4.5 months, 5 months ago. And no one ever heard it.
No, we didn't put it out. Well, we didn't have a vehicle, but now we do. So
we were just waiting for another podcast so we could let people hear it. Well, does it have a title?
COVID-19-4. Is that the one you're talking about?
Let me have a look.
That's it. I had to come up with a drum beat, and then Jeff added the bass, and then it got cravened up.
Yeah, I threw some chords in over the top of that bass, and I certainly threw some chords in which I quite appreciated, very Craven-esque chords, but all I had to do was vomit over a guitar solo. And when you put those things together, I guess it sounds a little like this. Open Discussion was brought to you this evening by all purveyors of double albums everywhere. When in lockdown, we choose to stay in tiny rooms away from each other with no human contact whatsoever.